car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
Earlier today, Vice President Mike Pence delivered remarks at ICE headquarters. Let's take a listen to a portion of those comments.
You do all this because you love your country. You do all this because you're called to serve. But I want you to know, President Trump and I and the American people understand that behind these statistics and this work, you also, you do so oftentimes without regard to your personal safety. Men and women of ICE, like all of law enforcement, you've answered a call that requires you to put the lives of your countrymen ahead of your own. And I want you and your loved ones to know that we understand this. We appreciate and understand the risks that you face when you come into contact with violent criminals, when you enforce the law, when you remove drug dealers and gang members from our streets that threaten our families. In recent years, tragically, attacks on you and your fellow law enforcement officers have risen dramatically. In 2017, attacks on your fellow DHS colleagues at Customs and Border Protection increased by nearly 75%. And at ICE, assaults on your officers nearly tripled in 2017. But remarkably, but not surprisingly, these attacks have not diminished your commitment or your courage or your determination to enforce our laws.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutton Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Well, good afternoon. I was about to say June, but no, July 6th. I'm Pat Smits, the program It's the Law. And let me tell you about the weather. If you weren't planning on getting outside this weekend, please do. This is going to be what could be the best weekend of the summer. Tonight's mostly clear. Tomorrow, sunny. High of about 80 degrees, so it's going to be much cooler. We don't have to worry about the kind of humidity that we've been dealing with. Tomorrow night, Saturday, it's clear. Low of about 63 degrees. By Sunday, high about 84 degrees, and again, sunny. And so Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you know, beautiful sunny days. And into Tuesday, we have, again, it's going to be warmer, sunny, maybe a few clouds, and that's going to be great. Let's hope that the weather continues for the week, because one of the things that's coming up this week is the Black Potato Festival, and I wanted to let people know about that. If you don't know about it, it takes place in Clinton at the Old Mill, and the lineup includes one of our own, some of our own actually, the Thursday, July 12th. This is starting Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The On the River stage, starting out at 6 p.m., there's going to be two of them are attorneys, Jay Thatcher from Clinton, and many of you know Jay, and then on he plays with two other, Steve O'Malley is also an attorney, and Steve's brother Owen, and really something to catch. They're going to be on the river stage starting at 6 o'clock on Thursday, And then there's also a quarry stage, so there'll be someone at 6:30 on the quarry stage. And again, the there's going to be people both on the quarry stage and on the river stage other days. And so that, you know, go online, take a look at the lineup for 2018. And, for example, they're going to be switching because, for example, on Sunday at 6 p.m., the river stage, and then you switch over to 6:30, it's the quarry stage, and then again, earlier the day, there's one group on the river stage, and then as the next group is setting up, it's the quarry stage. And so you just walk into the Red Mill, get your tickets, and as I recall, the first stage is the river stage. And let's hope that we have nice weather, because last year on Thursday it started with a huge rainstorm. The guys were rained out and, of course, ended up playing at the Clinton House. But I encourage everyone to, you know, go out, see this festival. I think it's been going on for about, I think, over 20 years. You can obviously go online and look at Black Potato. That's P-A-T-A-T-O-E. And that brings back one of the former vice presidential candidates and how he came to Trenton and did not know how to spell potato, and they thought that the way that the youngster spelled it was wrong, when in fact the youngster was right and he wasn't. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about some of what's been going on. Not a lot going on this past week, of course, because of 4th of July. We luckily avoided a shutdown of the state. Those of you who remember what happened last year when the state did shut down, it meant that all of the people who had planned on coming to near where I live, Round Valley Reservoir, was closed. The state parks were closed. The beaches were closed. And the only one who enjoyed the state beaches, of course, was our Governor Christie. And believe me when I say that was broadcast all over the country. Not broadcast, but it was shown on television all over the country. I was in Baltimore, and we must have seen that picture of him sitting on the beach that was closed to everyone else. I bet we saw it on television, you know, 100 times, and I'm not really exaggerating. So what else is happening? Well, before I get into the talk about the cases, I did want to, again, give a little tribute to Karen Palatas. I did mention last week that she had passed away on Tuesday, June 26th. If you didn't know Karen, you really missed knowing a spectacular person. When they said that she's a woman with a true magnetic personality, that's really the best way to describe her. And she was fiercely loyal to family and friends. She was a longtime supporter of the chamber. And those of you who didn't know her may have seen her truck for many years. She operated MGX, promotions, and she had big pink trucks that drove all over Hunterdon County and surrounding counties advertising for various companies and events. I always thought that, you know, those of us who are old enough to remember the television program What's My Line, Karen would have been a perfect participant in that program. No one would have ever thought that Karen was a truck driver. But in any event, she was also incredibly involved in community, not only events, but community projects. I mean, for example, if you're familiar with the county and know of CEA, that's the Center for Educational Advancement, they have that annual turkey trot in Flemington, and she helped support CEA Karen did have a developmentally disabled daughter, and so Karen was a tireless advocate for CEA and its mission, and in fact she was a recipient of the Benefactor Award at one point. The other thing that most of us knew, or I think at least she didn't hide it, and she was very helpful to other people, especially women who had had cancer. She actually battled it for 18 years, and, you know, not to elicit sympathy because she never tried, but she really inspired others never to give up, and she really never gave up. She actually was diagnosed initially with breast cancer in 2000 and given about a 5% chance to live no more than 5 years. So she was a fighter and an inspiration to all of us, and especially to all women who get that dreaded diagnosis of breast cancer or any other cancer. She actually went out, and those of you who have been around for a long time might remember her, that she opened a Curves Fitness Center in Flemington. Curves is the fitness center that was designed for women. And apparently she lost a lot of weight. I didn't really know her back then. You know, she believed diet and exercise and, you know, everything to do with health and recovery. And I think a part of it was her great personality and her, you know, ability to laugh both at herself and at others. Not at others, excuse me, but to laugh at anything that was humorous, even if it was humorous because of her. As I said, she was non-judgmental, caring, supportive, you know, manner in which she dealt with people. And, you know, her success at Curves, she actually had apparently two more locations before she sold the company. And, of course, her husband of many years, I don't know Eric, but I know she worked with him, and he was, apparently he is a huge lover of car racing. She helped him with that. She actually knew everything there was about cars. You know, she did it all. She really did. And I think she was probably Eric's greatest supporter when he was racing. They traveled together. They, you know, she was a voracious reader, but she was always someone who had a kind word to say. Actually, I never heard her criticize anyone. And as I said, very involved in the civic, and including a longtime member of the Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce. She was a recipient of the Good Neighbor Award as well as the Chairman's Club Award. That's how I met Karen, and certainly was just one of the hundreds of acquaintances that she had. And but I knew if I ever needed anything that I could, excuse me, certainly call on her. She, as a result of her efforts with the Hunterdon Prevention Resources, which is now Prevention Resources, the organization created the Karen Politas Community Giving Award in her memory. That would certainly, this is in her memory, certainly be a way to donate something in Karen's memory. And so to all of those who are, you know, so sad by her passing, there is going to be a celebration of her life on July 14th, that's Saturday, next Saturday, at 2:30 p.m. in the Chapel of Wright and Ford Family Funeral Home. And then there will be, that's at 38 State Highway 31, Flemington, if you don't know where it is. And family and friends are invited to visit between 1 and 2:30 p.m. at the funeral home, and then there will be a reception to follow. But, you know, for all of us who knew Karen, I hope we can take some time to celebrate her life, and that's what she would have wanted. And she did have a life to celebrate. So I'll be back after we hear some few things from some of the people who keep us on the air, and we'll be talking about legal issues.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms. When they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Well, back again. I'm Pat Smiths. The program, It's the Law, Fridays at 4. And those of you who know me know that I am an attorney, practice here in Hunterdon County. My office is here in Hunterdon County now. For years, I also had an office in Morristown. And I do practice all over the state, but my practice is limited to family law. So usually I try to talk about what's happening in the law and certainly not limiting it to family law. There was a case that was not approved for publication. However, I think it's an important case because most people are not aware of the fact that there is a registry if, in fact, someone is found guilty of domestic violence. There is a domestic violence central registry. And in this case that was not reported, but obviously meaning it was not published. It was reported but not published, so it's not precedent. In this case, the defendant appealed the denial of his motion to delete his name from the domestic violence central registry. Okay. And what happened is the plaintiff in the case sought a restraining order pursuant to the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act, usually just the DV Act. And the trial court denied plaintiff's request for a final restraining order. In other words, what happens, as I've explained before, if someone files a complaint, they go before a judge and or a hearing officer, and they are granted a temporary restraining order. Then within 10 days, there needs to be a final hearing if a temporary restraining order, a TRO, is issued. So in this case, the trial judge denied the request for a final restraining order, but a week later granted plaintiff's request to reinstate the temporary restraining order, obviously a very unusual situation. And then after a hearing, the trial court granted a final restraining order against the defendant, and that's when he appealed. While the appeal was pending, because remember, appeals can take a year or longer. So what happened is while the appeal was pending, he requested dismissal of the complaint and the final restraining order. And the trial court granted the request and vacated the final restraining order. Then he moved to dismiss the appeal as moot and move for an order deleting his name from the registry. So the motion to delete was remanded, and the defendant argued the dismissal of the complaint rendered the court's finding that he violated the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act a nullity. So the remand court, meaning the trial court, disagreed. They found that the dismissal did not completely erase the finding of domestic violence and denied deletion. Defendant argued the court's vacation of the final restraining order eliminated the sole basis for his inclusion on the list. Defendant argued that the court, as I said, the court found, the appellate court found, that the plain language of the statute, that's NJSA 2C:25C:25-34, did not require or permit the removal of the defendant's name from the registry, and the statute expressly required the registry to list all persons who've had domestic violence restraining orders entered against them. Now, that's very interesting, because taken to its logical conclusion, that means that if there is a final restraining order that's entered against the defendant, and the defendant files an appeal, and on appeal, the appellate division overturns the trial court decision, according to this language, the statute expressly required the registry to list, quote, all persons who've had domestic violence restraining orders entered against them. So here's someone who, on appeal, the appellate court even didn't just dismiss the final restraining order, but remanded it because the trial judge made some error. And there was another trial, and the trial judge did not enter a final restraining order. That person, that defendant, would still be on the registry, because the registry has to list all persons who've had domestic violence restraining orders entered against them. Now, it doesn't make any sense. I have not read this case. It's not published, but I'm certainly going to read it, because it certainly, I can't imagine that the legislature intended to require someone who had a final restraining order overturned to be listed on the registry. But that's the kind of thing that we have to look very carefully at statutes and how they're written, because according to the court, that is the way that decision came down. And it didn't make any difference whether or not, in this case, the final restraining order was dismissed. So, in fact, it was moot. So, and one of the things that is so important, and of course I handle domestic violence cases, and one of the things that we do fairly often is agree that instead of proceeding with a trial under the prevention of domestic violence, that we will enter into an order in the family part. One or the other party files a complaint in the family part, and we put the civil restraints in that order because it means that there's not a final restraining order against the person. And believe me, this can have severe repercussions to have a final restraining order against you. I represented, I did work for the military. There were a group of us who around the country who handled family law cases, and I had a case at one time where I represented this young man whose girlfriend had filed a complaint, a domestic violence complaint against him. They had a baby in common, so that it came under that statute. She filed it in New Jersey. If he had been convicted of domestic violence, he would have been out of the military because there was no way that he'd be able to carry a gun. In any event, we ended up trying the case. He was not convicted. It, frankly, was a phony setup case. But the point is, it had severe repercussions if a police officer who has to carry a gun is convicted of domestic violence. Military the same way. Now there's another side of that, which means that there's a lot of pressure not to file against someone who's in the military. You can imagine that someone who's been married to a military person for 18 years, he's got two more years to get his pension, to vest his pension. She doesn't want to do anything to jeopardize the pension. So that's one thing we have to take into consideration. But the point is, a final restraining order is incredibly significant. I can't imagine why people go to court, someone who's been where there's a TRO and they're facing a final restraining order, why they go to court and without an attorney, because it is a serious offense. And even if later on, and it's usually, most of them are filed by women against men, but not always. The statute is very liberal now. But the point is, even if the, let's say it's a woman against her husband, and she decides for economic reasons that she doesn't want the final restraining order, and she decides that she's going to go in and ask for it to be the final restraining order to be vacated. She can certainly do that. However, according to the statute, because the registry has to list all persons who've had domestic violence restraining orders entered against them, he would still be on the registry. What happens, there's a federal judge in Newark has granted final approval to a $160 million settlement on behalf of out-of-network ambulatory surgical centers, which claimed the insurance company's policies did not provide adequate reimbursement for services rendered. So they got a big benefit now. There was a federal jury in Newark who returned an $11.8 million verdict in a patent infringement suit over an apparatus for applying flea and tick repellent to pets. So one of the things that is important if you have an invention or if you have something that should be, you should get a patent for, it's really important to do that. And at least here we can see that somebody was protected by the courts. And $11.8 million judgment is huge, obviously. There are a number of other cases that have not been published. There was a plaintiff appealed from two orders of the bankruptcy court granting enforcement of the sale order and dismissing the complaint against the defendants. So this is... of interest to anyone who is running into problems with the possible and the possible need to file bankruptcy. As I said, there are many of these cases that are really important to read because they certainly give a flavor of the court and their decisions on certain issues. As an attorney, if I'm going to the appellate division, it's really incumbent to find out who the judges are and, if I can, what, in fact, they've looked at and how they've made decisions in other similar cases, if there are similar cases. The leader of the National Urban League told a packed room of attorneys who came out to the New Jersey State Bar Association Diversity Summit on June 28th, that lawyers need to play and they have a role to play when it comes to deciding the future of the United States. Speakers during the day at that program talked about matters such as family separations and immigration, implicit bias, disability in the law, discriminatory opposition to mosques, temples, and synagogues, and how to be, possibly different ways that lawyers can deal with some of these issues. There was many of you may have heard of the a Trenton police officer who committed suicide after being identified as having sex with a prostitute. A New Jersey judge has ruled that the widow of the Trenton police officer cannot sue a local newspaper or the Mercer County prosecutor's office for defamation, emotional distress, and other claims. So that would be, not a reported case, but that was a case of interest. So the Supreme Court recently made a decision that's really going to affect public sector unions, and that is the ruling that the public sector unions can't force non-members to pay fees to cover collective bargaining costs. And that, in fact, is expected to undermine union power. For example, public unions which represent workers such as state police officers, teachers, and firefighters, people who work for DCPMP, and other agencies obviously rely on the fees as a big source of their revenue that they need to represent them. So the incentive to be a member of the union, if you're not a member of these unions, then you still have to pay a portion of the fees. And so what will happen is, It'll be very hard to convince many people that they should pay fees for union dues. Union dues, or some portion of the money spent in collective bargaining, and could be a huge problem. I mean, we can look back at what happened when Governor Christie shut down the state. A lot of people are, you know, they can't afford to lose 2 or 3 days of pay. They have to be available. They are available. And should they suffer the burden of not getting paid, some people would say, well, it was a vacation. But for many people, it really isn't. It's not a vacation when you have to pay your daycare, when you have to pay your mortgage, and you have to pay all of these other things, and that you were ready, willing, and able to go to work. So that's going to be and has been a big dilemma. And in New Jersey, in the case of New Jersey, the unions negotiated with the state and, in fact, collected the back pay, et cetera, for the people. And many of them, we're not talking about high-paying jobs. We're talking about many people with very low-paying jobs. So let me come back, take a short break to give you some information about our sponsors, and then we'll be back with more legal news.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more...
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
100 Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. 100 Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call 100 Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.100andhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, I'm Pat Smits. We're back talking about some legal cases, and I'm also going to talk a little bit about some of the things you have to be concerned about with the new tax law. But the talking about tax, there was a case where it was a Metz Family LP versus the Township of Freehold. And that was approved for publication this week. In this case, the defendant moved to dismiss plaintiff's complaint on grounds that it failed to respond to defendant's Chapter 91 request. Plaintiff conceded, and I'm going to have to find out myself what this is, as far as the 91 request. It's not the kind of law I handle. So plaintiff conceded its non-response, but argued that dismissal of its complaint was improper because the 45-day limit for response, which is the court limit, was past November 1st, the date for submission of the assessor's preliminary tax lists, which applied to counties whose boards of taxation participated in the assessment demonstration program. So in response, defendant argued that the controlling date was May 5th of the tax year when the final tax bill was submitted by assessors of taxing districts in ADP participating counties. So what happened is the court rejected the defendant's argument and denied its motion to dismiss. The court agreed with the plaintiff that November 1st was the controlling date for ADP participation, so that, let's see what else was important. Court noted that the ADP participating counties were required to submit their preliminary tax lists on November 1st, the time to receive the information incorporated into the presenting documents. So this goes on, and because the defendant's Chapter 91 request was not sent at least 45 days prior to the November 1st date, it was defective, so didn't prevail. There was another case that same. It was published. It was a legal malpractice case. Defendant appealed from the trial court's decision applying New Jersey's six-year statute of limitation. So we have a six-year statute of limitations against malpractice in this state, which I think most people agree that it really is too long. But in any event, in other states, it's not that long. In other states, there has to be timely filing of these matters. So in any event, the court in this one dismissed. Let's be back after we hear from one more spot, and then we'll, actually, we have quite a bit of time. So let me talk, instead of talking the cases, let me talk a little bit about the legal and questions that you need to be looking at under the new tax law, at least from smart businesses. And I appreciate Denise Wright. She's a certified public accountant in Clinton, and I actually got this information from her, and so I'm not going to say that I created it because I didn't. It is certainly some good information. If you, it's called Today's Money, and I would certainly contact Denise if you wanted more information about this. Her number is 908-323-2630, and she's in Clinton, as I said. So what should, as small businesses, many of us here in the chamber are small businesses. I don't think we call our attorneys or our accountants, perhaps don't call them often enough. So I think this is some good information. So the Tax Cuts and Job Acts, that's what it was called, the TCJA, passed in late 2017. And it made big tax changes, including individual tax rates, and, of course, if you are self-employed and pay your taxes on a quarterly basis, calculating your new tax obligation is going to be a little more complicated than it was in the past. So here are some of the tips to handle quarterly payments under the new code. What we call safe harbor rules. And if you withhold at least 100% of last year's tax obligation, that's a safe harbor. So what you need to do is just look at what you paid last year and pay the same this year. Now, you might be paying too much or too little. And so that is something that it's called the safe harbor. If you pay in 100% of what you paid last year, even if you earned a lot more money this year, you will be okay as long as you paid everything in that you needed to pay in. Okay, and so you, I guess you could, of course, pay in too much, which means you'll get a refund. If you pay in too little, at least you won't face an underpayment penalty. So that it could be either way. In other words, if you don't pay in enough, you're not going to be hit with an underemployment. So take care if your income is over $150,000. So then the IRS requires you to do a number of things. Requires your safe harbor payments to be 110% of last year's tax amount rather than 100%. So I guess most of us will be happy if we have income over $150,000. But if you cross that threshold, you have to make safe harbor payments. Okay, so the next thing.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Okay, so you're self-employed and you have to make estimated taxes, payments, that is, estimated tax payments. And the IRS has finally done something to help us, and that is they put up a new withholding calculator on its website, and that was done in late February. Now, that reflects the tax changes, and we can use it to calculate our estimated payments based on what we expect to earn in 2018. Now, as long as we estimate for this year, and as long as it comes within 90% of our actual tax obligations, we won't face an underpayment penalty. I mean, I think this is really very, very significant. So I'm going to say it again. Go on to the IRS calculator on its website. Take a look and use the calculations and calculate them to your estimated payments based on what you expect to earn in 2018. So as long as your estimate for this year comes within 90%, it doesn't have to be 100%. Obviously, you can pay 100% of what you paid last year. That's safe. That means that you will either, that's a safe way to do it because the IRS will owe you money if, in fact, you don't owe them all those taxes. But in this way, it's to, as long as you pay 90% of your actual tax obligation, you won't have to face a penalty. And there are underpayment penalties. So, if, you know, consider using the estimate option if you expect this year's income to be the same or lower than last year's. And a word of caution, of course, is the IRS does not guarantee their calculations will provide you with accurate results. And many of us would do our own calculations before relying on them. So take the time to make changes now to help yourself make the conversion. Now, it will also make sure you don't have any surprises next year at tax time. Okay, so what else is happening in as far as some of the things we need to know about taxes? Well, the health insurance penalty is still around for 2018, so that the Affordable Care Act individual mandate penalty is still in effect for 2018. The Tax Cuts and Jobs, the mandate requires most taxpayers, unless qualified for a health coverage exemption, to carry a minimum level of health insurance. Uninsured taxpayers may pay a penalty called the Individual Insured Responsibility Payment. The fee is owed for any month that you, your spouse, or your tax dependent don't have a qualifying health coverage. So we can estimate that fee, but you may have to pay she says that you can estimate the fee, but you may have to pay on taxpayer advocate.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, with the last few minutes in the program, I just wanted to talk to you again and remind you again to be very careful because there are lots of schemes, including what they call email phishing schemes, which were ranked among the most concerning filing season scams this year. Part of the annual listing of the Dirty Dozen tax scams for 2018, the tax scams target both taxpayers and tax professionals by using fake IRS emails and websites to steal sensitive information. So always remember that the IRS does not initiate contact with taxpayers by email and never by telephone. And they would never request by email that you would send them personal information or financial information. And this also includes text messages and social media. They're not contacting us through these sources. If you get this also includes text messages and social media. If, for example, if you get an unsolicited, excuse me, an unsolicited email from what appears to be the IRS or an organization related to the IRS, report it by sending it to phishing. That's phishing at irs.gov. So that you should never respond to it, or never give out any personal information, and give no personal information over the phone. And in fact, there happens to be one bank. I will mention the initials. It starts with a B, and the second word is O, and the last word starts with an A. And I was having them call me repeatedly. So let's make sure that nobody is getting into our sensitive information. Should never give this information over the phone, really. I know, and it's troublesome to me that we have to produce it when we make purchases. I recently had a situation where they were asking for this kind of personal information. Hang up, don't provide it. And tell everyone in your household the same thing. So that, you know, another question that often comes up is home equity indebtedness still deductible? Well, technically, no. In other words, home equity indebtedness is not deductible. And when I say that technically, it's if you have a home equity loan or line of credit that was used to pay off credit cards or other debts. So the it's about the end of the program, and I'm having some problems with my voice here. Why don't I play the news, and then we'll come back with the sports guys. But I did want to say that there's a new 20% business deduction, and the question is it available for sole proprietors and other pass-through entities like S-corporations and partnerships? The complex new rules are causing headaches even for expert tax professionals. In other words, in short, a deduction of up to 20% of qualified business income is available, but it's reduced. So that will be something we might be able to talk about in future programs. But for now, let's go to the news and then come back with, hopefully, the sports guys.
USA Radio News.
Today is the first day that the United States slapped 25% tariffs on $34 billion of Chinese goods. Chinese officials have retaliated with tariffs on U.S. goods such as soybeans, seafood, SUVs, and crude oil. Congressman Chuck Fleischman of Tennessee says this whole matter is very concerning.
There's been a huge trade imbalance for quite some time. What's been going on in the past in terms of our trade deficit is not working. Having said that, Tennessee, my home state, has long been a beneficiary of free trade. So we're going to have to wait and see. Obviously, we have to take each country on a country-by-country basis. The EU is different from China. China is different from Canada.
Tonight, the president and vice president will dine in New Jersey. Much of the conversation will probably revolve around who President Trump will nominate to replace retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy for the Supreme Court. This is USA Radio News.
I'm Captain Obvious, and Hotels.com rewards me basically everywhere I stay. So why am I currently skipping stones with four locals and one grizzly bear outside this Riverside Lodge in Portland? Because Hotels.com lets me do me. And because, honestly, the bear just kind of joined in, and now we're afraid that if we stop, he'll get angry. He can smell our fear. Hotels.com. You do you, and get rewarded.
Breaking news from MyPillow.com. Free shipping when you purchase two premium MyPillows on the two-pack special. Free shipping. 60-day money-back guarantee.